Second Kings chapter 19, and whoever's playing music and stop that now, that'd be wonderful. We are in the middle of the life of Hezekiah, one of the last, only one other godly king in Judah. The northern kingdom of Israel has been carried away. We're going through this whole routine, if you're just stepping in tonight, of the nation of Israel, them coming into the land, the failure under judges, God raising up finally David, and then the kingdom being passed to Solomon, and Solomon's failure at the end of his life, and then the dividing of the kingdom, and Jeroboam in the north then leading the nation to worship golden calves, because he didn't want them to go down to the southern half of the kingdom, to Jerusalem, to worship where God had prescribed worship. And then it's a difficult task following the southern kingdom of Judah with their kings in Jerusalem, the northern kingdom with their kings in Samaria, and how they flip back and forth, and prophets that are kind of interspersed in there, some of them just in the north, some of them just in the south. Some of the prophets seem to be functioning in both. And it's the best way to do it is get yourself a Bible handbook or something with a chart on it that you can look and see northern kingdom and the kings, southern kingdom and the kings, and the prophets. And you can just, it's easier to look at than it is to read sometimes. So the lessons that are contained therein are the important thing. And I think the rest of our lives we spend trying to put this in a chronological picture in our minds. But Assyria is the world empire. Sennacherib is on the throne in Assyria. Babylon is slowly coming to power, not yet the world power. Sennacherib now has gone, carried away 41 cities out of Judah, out of the southern part of Israel. We found those inscriptions this century in Assyrian monuments. And Sennacherib now has sent his servants to Jerusalem to say to Jerusalem, look, don't think you're going to escape. There's some other battles that are going on that distract him. But he says to those who live in Jerusalem, you're going to be dead. You know, don't think that you can trust in this God that you talk about. Look, Hezekiah tore down all of his altars on the high hills. Well, those are pagan altars. Sennacherib didn't understand. So the servants of Hezekiah say to the representatives of the Assyrian army standing outside the walls of Jerusalem, do us a favor, speak to us in the Syrian tongue. We understand that. Don't speak to us in the Hebrew tongue, because you're going to freak out everybody in the city. And they say, oh, really? Well, how's this? Everybody in there is going to die. You're going to eat your own dung and drink your own urine. I'm not making it up. That's in here. You know, that's how bad things are going to get. And they're saying, please stop it. And they're screaming over the wall, your God's nothing. You're all going to die. You're going to, you know, this is how bad things you're going to get. And that's where we left off. I told you. You're just stepping in, kind of an interesting place to come in. Look in verse 37 of chapter 18. That's then Eliakim, one of the good guys, son of Hilkiah, which was over the household of Shebna, the scribe, and Joah, the son of Asaph, the recorder. They came to Hezekiah with their clothes torn. They tore their clothes in mourning and told him the words of Rabshakeh. That's the representative of Sennacherib. And it came to pass when King Hezekiah heard it that he tore his clothes and covered himself with sackcloth and went into the house of the Lord. Now, that's a good thing to do when your total existence is being threatened. Tearing your clothes and sackcloth and ashes was just an outward symbol of the attitude of the heart when your entire world is falling apart. I admire someone who goes to the Lord, because I see people that are in the church that when their entire world disintegrates, they get bitter at God. They go back in the bar. They go back into the world of drugs. And, you know, some of the people in the church here that are really my heroes are the people who go through horrendous things and continue to follow the Lord and to walk with Him and under difficult circumstances that give no evidence of God's love outwardly. They find that deep, deep place within them where they commune with the Spirit of God, and they're given strength and solace. And those are really my heroes. And here Hezekiah is one of those men now, tearing his garments, seeking the Lord in a difficult time as he's being threatened, his position. It would be nice if the two candidates were somewhere tearing their clothes and putting ashes on their head and praying and saying, Lord, have your will in this. And he sent Eliakim, which was over the household, and Shibna the scribe, and the elders of the priest, covered with sackcloth, to Isaiah the prophet, the son of Amos. And they said unto him, Thus saith Hezekiah, This day is a day of trouble, and of rebuke, and of blasphemy. For the children are come to the birth, and there is no strength to bring forth. Women are so hopeless, they are not even bringing forth their children. They're in full term, and not even enough strength, completely hopeless. It may be the Lord thy God will hear all the words of Rabshakeh, whom the king of Assyria, his master, has sent to reproach the living God, and will reprove the words which the Lord thy God hath heard. Wherefore lift up thy prayer for the remnant that are left. So the servants of King Hezekiah came to Isaiah. That's a good thing to do. I need a word from the Lord. I need something. Everything's being threatened. Go find Isaiah the prophet. Tell him what's going on. Give him word. Ask him to seek the Lord. Difficult circumstance. We need to know God's heart in this. And Isaiah said to them, Thus shall you say to your master, Thus saith the Lord, Be not afraid of the words which thou hast heard, with which the servants of the king of Assyria have blasphemed me, God speaking through Isaiah to Hezekiah. Behold, verse 7, which means consider this, I will send a blast upon him, and he shall hear a rumor, and shall return to his own land, and I will cause him to fall by the sword in his own land. Now take note of that, literally fulfilled. I will send a blast upon him. And boy, what a blast it is. It's not a blast for Sennacherib, it's a blast for God. And he's going to die by the sword in his own land. So don't be afraid of what he's saying. You have to understand. In the end of the chapter, we're going to see 185,000 crack troops of Assyria dead outside the city. That means as Hezekiah and these people are looking over the walls of Jerusalem, they're literally seeing tens upon tens upon tens upon tens upon tens of thousands of Assyrian troops that have laid waste the entire Middle East at this point in time. An innumerable, you know, army, unimaginable to us in that day to look over the wall to see this. And God says, tell Hezekiah not to sweat it, just to chill. I'm going to handle this. I'm going to send a blast upon them. And then Sennacherib's going to die by the sword in his own land. So, verse 8, Rabshakeh returned and found the king of Assyria warring against Libna. He had a little diversion there. For he had heard that he was departed from Lachish. And when he heard say of Tirhaka, king of Ethiopia, Behold, he has come out to fight against thee. He sent messengers again to Hezekiah, saying, Thus shall ye speak to Hezekiah. Now, what's happening is Sennacherib got in this little skirmish with Libna. He had to leave Lachish to do that. And as he's kind of sidetracked in that, he's heard now that Tirhaka, king of Ethiopia, is coming up, and then he's going to be attacked from the south. So he immediately wants to tell Hezekiah, don't think this is getting you off the hook. Thou shalt speak to Hezekiah, king of Judah, saying, Let not thy God, notice this, what he knows about Hezekiah, in whom thou trustest. No. People know whether your profession is real and my profession is real in difficult circumstances. You know, it's a shame, but sometimes it isn't until someone sees a Christian in horrendous circumstances that they really understand they do trust in this God that they talk about. We've seen surgeons and doctors talk to people in our church who have cancer or whose children have cancer and be so touched, so amazed by what they see. We were approached by one of the bigger hospitals in the city to ask us about being part of a program because they realized that people that receive prayer have a greater degree of recovery. Now, the problem is, of course, they don't want to hear the truth, that it's a testimony to the resurrection of Jesus Christ, who is the Lord of Lords and the King of Kings, that somebody's healed through prayer. They think it's faith in faith. It's something, it's, you know, it's positive energy or something, and then people get prayer, and then they don't know positive energy sitting on a throne. His name is Jesus, and he's coming back with his vesture dipped in blood on a white horse to take control of the earth. So it's difficult to go in there, you know, because you want to just say, you know, look in the book of Acts. People were healed, giving proof. God healed people of the gospel that was being preached and the death and resurrection of Christ. But they do know, as they watch, that your faith is real when they observe you in difficult circumstances. And it's easy to be a Christian when things are nice. It's easy for me. I don't know about you. You look like you can't relate. You know, and everything's going great. It's easy to be a Christian when things are wonderful. Gets tested out when the heat gets turned up, you know. Miles McPherson, when he was here, said Christians are like tea bags. You don't find out what flavor they are till they get in hot water. Well, they're finding out. Hezekiah. Say to Hezekiah, king of Judah, let not thy God in whom thou trustest, notice, deceive thee, saying, Jerusalem shall not be delivered into the hand of the king of Assyria. Behold, thou hast heard what the kings of Assyria have done to all lands by destroying them utterly, and shalt thou be delivered? Have the gods of the nations delivered them, which my fathers have destroyed, of Gozan and Haran and Rezif and the children of Eden and they that are in Thelazar? Where is the god of Hamath and the god of Arpad and the god of the city of Sepharvaim, which is in the land of Babylon, and of Hena and of Ivah? Names all of these foreign lands, said their gods weren't able to deliver them. Well, their gods weren't gods. You know, when an invading army's coming, you got to load your god in the back of your wagon to head out of town. You got the wrong god. And, you know, in an interesting way, it's a great exhortation for us. Just because the gods of the people that are around us are being destroyed, that doesn't mean we can't trust in our God. Because I have a feeling, as things go on, we're going to see Mammon destroyed, god of money. We're going to see Asherim, the god of pleasure, destroyed. We're going to see the god of power destroyed. We're going to see the gods of the heathen destroyed. That has nothing to do with whether we can trust our God or not, because of all of those other things crumbling. Hezekiah received this letter. This is a letter that Sennacherib sent. Don't let your God deceive you. Don't think you can trust him. I whooped everybody else. I'm going to whoop your God too. That's a paraphrase of the letter. Hezekiah received the letter of the hand of the messengers and read it. This is great. And Hezekiah went up into the house of the Lord and spread it before the Lord and said, it's for you. You know, here's this letter from Sennacherib. Don't trust that God. You think he's hot stuff. Don't let him deceive you. He's going to protect Jerusalem. I whooped all the other gods. I'm going to whoop your God too. Hezekiah reads it and says, I know what to do with this. Goes up to the temple, lays it, said, Lord, it's for you. I had my address on it, but it's for you. Hezekiah knows that every single thing around him is being threatened by his trust in Jehovah. If Hezekiah would surrender, the Assyrians have already said, open your gates, surrender. We'll carry you away to foreign lands. You'll have vineyards, you'll have food, you'll have farms, we'll place you somewhere else. You'll prosper, it'll be somewhere else, but if you stay there, you're all going to die. Imagine the pressure. Sometimes we get it as a father or a mother in a family, you know, we get pressure, you know, just standing our ground in small things. Imagine Hezekiah looks around at the people that work around him, that he loves, he cares about. He looks around at the people in his court, at the city of Jerusalem, the temple. And he knows, if I say no to these guys and I trust the Lord right now, everything in my life is at stake. He goes and he spreads this letter before the Lord. And Hezekiah prayed before the Lord and said, O Lord, capital L, capital O, capital R, capital D, O Yahweh, Jehovah, the God of Israel, the covenant-keeping God. Notice, which dwellest between the cherubim. There's no Assyrian king there between the cherubim. There's only one king there, the King of heaven and earth. Thou art the God, even thou alone. Of all the kingdoms of the earth, thou hast made heaven and earth. Lord, and I'm sure he said this with all sincerity, bow down thine ear and hear. Oh God, please hear me. Open, Lord, thine eyes and see. And hear the words of Sennacherib, which has sent him to reproach the living God. Sennacherib is offering you out. Of a truth, Lord, the kings of Assyria have destroyed the nations and their lands, and have cast their gods into the fire. They can burn your God. You got the wrong God. For they were no gods, but the work of men's hands, wood and stone. Therefore, they have destroyed them. Isaiah is prophesying at this time, and he says, what's wrong with you people? You go into a forest, you cut down a tree. You drag it back to your house. You use part of it to make a table and chairs. You use part of it for fuel in your fireplace. And then with another part of it, you carve a god out of it, take it down to the smith and have him overlay gold and silver on it, and pull it home on your wagon to your house. He says, don't you see what's wrong with this picture? You know, your God can't even walk home from the smith. You got to drag him home on a wagon, and the other part of your God is your table and chairs, and the other part of your God's being burned in the fireplace. What's wrong with this picture? And no doubt, Hezekiah greatly influenced saying this. Yeah, they've gone, they've destroyed all the other lands, they've burned their gods in a fire, but they're the work of man's hands, wood and stone. Therefore, they have destroyed them. Now, therefore, O Lord, our God, I beseech thee, save thou us out of his hand, and all the kingdoms of the earth, that all the kingdoms of the earth may know that thou art the Lord God, even thou only. Then Isaiah the son of Amoz sent to Hezekiah, saying, thus saith the Lord God of Israel, that which thou hast prayed to me against Sennacherib, king of Assyria, I have heard. Now that's interesting. Isaiah wasn't there, but sends word, God was listening. He heard your prayer. That must be nice. That must be music to his ears. And this is the word that the Lord has spoken concerning him, concerning Sennacherib. Now God's going to mock him. The virgin daughter of Zion hath despised thee, and laughed thee to scorn. Now the virgin daughter of Zion is Jerusalem. And Jerusalem's a virgin in the sense that Assyria hasn't entered and will not enter Jerusalem. And in that sense, there's a metaphor. But Jerusalem, the daughter of Zion, is a virgin. And she's going to mock you to scorn. The daughter of Jerusalem has shaken her head at thee. You know, Nah, 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 nah. That's the idea. You know, I've been in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, at least 11 different countries. And everywhere I go, little kids have this international tease melody. Nah, 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 nah. It doesn't matter what country they're from. There's just something about that, you know. And this is the idea here. The Virgin Daughter of Jerusalem is going to wag her head at you and mock you, the holy na-nas. She's going to shake her head at you, whom hast thou reproached and blasphemed, and against whom hast thou exalted thy voice and lifted up thine eyes on high? Against who? Even against the Holy One of Israel. By thy messengers thou hast reproached the Lord, and hast said, now he's going to say what Sennacherib and Assyria says in their heart. With the multitude of my chariots I am come up to the height of the mountains on the sides of Lebanon, and will cut down the tall cedar trees thereof, and the choice fir trees thereof. And I will enter into the lodgings of his borders, and into the forest of his Carmel. I have digged and drunk storage waters, and with the sole of my feet have I dried up all of the rivers of besieged places. This is the boasting of Sennacherib in Assyria. Now God asks Sennacherib a question. Hast thou not heard long ago how I have done it, and of ancient times that I have formed it, and now have I brought it to pass that thou shouldest be to lay waste fenced cities into ruinous heaps? He says to Sennacherib, Nazir, don't you understand in the ancient times how it's been written? I'm the one who said it. I'm the one who's raised you up. You're just a rod in my hand to bring judgment on these cities. Therefore, their inhabitants were of small power. The only reason you whooped them so easy is because I was using you. They were dismayed and confounded. They were as the grass of the field, and as the green herb, as the grass on the housetops, and as the grain blasted before it's grown up. God is saying, I only use you to prove, as it says in verse 12, that all of the gods of the nations are nothing. And God says, but I know thy abode, thy going out and thy coming in, and I know thy rage against me. Because thy rage is against me, and thy tumult has come up in my ears, therefore I will put my hook in thy nose. Well, I don't like, you don't like that when God says that to you. I will put my hook in thy nose, and my bridle in thy lips, and I will turn thee back by the way by which thou camest. Now, the Assyrians were famous for this, putting a hook, a large hook through. They get all their captives. You know, if you got a whole bunch of people and you want to lead them away captive, it's hard to get them to cooperate. It isn't hard at all. If you put a big hook through their nose and just yank them once in a while, they're coming. You chain their hands and they can't pull it out. Chain their hands behind their back, put a big hook in their nose or a big hook through the lip, and you want them to move. You just pull on it a little bit. God says, I'm putting a hook in your nose. I'm going to put a hook in your lip. I'm going to lead you right back where you came from. Verse 29, he begins to speak now to Hezekiah and Judah. God says to Hezekiah, now to Judah, this shall be a sign unto you. You shall eat this year such things as grow of themselves, and in the second year that which springeth of the same. And in the third year sow ye, and reap, and plant vineyards, and eat fruit thereof, and the remnant that is escaped of the house of Judah shall yet again take root downward and bear fruit upward, for out of Jerusalem shall go forth a remnant. And they that escape out of Mount Zion, and the zeal of the Lord of hosts shall do this. And what he says is, this is what I want you to say to Hezekiah and Judah, because they're surrounded by armies. They can't even get out of their own walls. this year, because they couldn't plant that year, this year what you're going to do is you're going to eat what's left growing in the field of itself. You're going to get outside these walls. That's how you're going to survive. And the next year is going to be the same thing. But in the third year, you'll be back in the process of sowing and reaping, and the ground's going to bring forth again. And this whole army that's out there camped against you isn't going to stop that from happening. God's saying, when the worst circumstances are against you, without your help, there will be things that will spring forth that you'll be able to survive on. He says it to us. When our world is falling apart, when the odds are so overwhelming that there's no human measure of resource that can do any good, God says, I will make it spring forth of itself. Once, twice, until your routine begins and you're back in a routine of sowing and reaping and moving forward again. He's the same. He never changes. And I'm going to do this. The zeal of the Lord of hosts shall do this. Therefore, thus saith the Lord, verse 32, concerning the king of Assyria, he shall not come into this city. Now, try to imagine this. Nor shoot an arrow there, nor come before it with shield, or cast a bank against it. By the way that he came, by the same shall he return, and shall not come into this city. Now, this is not news for the rational mind. He's not going to come into the city. He's not going to shoot an arrow against it. You can see them run out, run up on the wall, look over the wall again. There's tens of thousands, or maybe 30, 40, 50,000 archers standing outside. Maybe 70,000 archers. Run back down the wall, back to the temple. What did he say again? Not a single arrow is going to be fired. You know, do you find in your life that there are things that you believe that God's given you from His Word that are hard to talk about to your unsaved relatives? There are, aren't there? Go to Thanksgiving, Thursday, and tell your relatives, this is right where the Scripture said we'd be. Europe is becoming a power again, America is decreasing in strength. The Antichrist is going to come to power. This is just good Thanksgiving table conversation. I think you're out of your mind. And then for dessert, say, but I'm not worried because the Lord's going to descend with a shout, the voice of the archangel, the trump of God. We're going to disappear and fly up in the air. We're going to be with the Lord forever. Make sure and tell them that so that when you disappear, they're all scrounging around trying to find Left Behind, the new video that God's going to leave millions of all over the planet and when we're gone. See what happened. I mean, this is not stuff for the rational mind. I mean, is that absurd? You know, we're laughing because you understand what it's like to believe and take hold of in your heart the things of God, His love. I mean, it's more remarkable that we're sitting here tonight justified, sanctified, and glorified. Those are not things for the rational mind. Does it sound absurd to say those things to your elders and friends? Is it any more absurd than God saying, the Assyrians are not going to come in, and there's not going to be a single arrow fired at the city? You run up and look over the wall again real fast. 60,000 archers sitting out there is waiting for somebody to say, fire. Verse 33. By the way that he came, by the same shall he return, shall not come into this city, saith the Lord. God knows how to protect his people. He could say through Isaiah, no weapon formed against thee shall prosper. You know, we read the prophecies of Scripture. Maybe they're hard for us to embrace. Do you think it was any less difficult for Hezekiah to embrace the things that Isaiah was saying in person that we have written down now? I don't think so. Verse 34, for I will defend this city. You can take that to heart as you watch the news today. To save it, notice, for mine own sake and for my servant David's sake. So, it came to pass that night that the angel of the Lord went out. Doesn't tell us where he went out from. Seems like maybe he was in the city and they were unaware of him. The angel of the Lord went out and smote. Now that sounds noisy to me, but it doesn't seem noisy as we read the verse. He smote in the camp of the Assyrians 185,000. 185,000 crack troops. And when they, that's not the 185,000 dead men, when they arose, that has to be Israel, Jerusalem, when they arose early in the morning, behold, they were all dead corpses. That means nobody was screaming at night, nobody was waking them up. Everybody inside the city got up in the morning, everybody outside the city didn't get up anymore. One angel, 185,000 Assyrian crack troops that had laid waste all these other cities, and one night, the angel of the Lord goes through the camp. They're dead. 36 is a foregone conclusion. So Sennacherib, king of Assyria, departed. I guess he did. He gets up in the morning and says, all right, men, ready? Men? Men? He departed. He returned and dwelled in Nineveh. He went home. When that happens, you go home. Now, it's interesting. Look at this. One angel. I encourage you, if you get a chance, sometime holidays are coming, if you kind of like to read a good book, get Billy Graham's book on angels. Great book. And in the preface, he said, you know, one of the reasons I wrote this is because, he said, we hear so much in the church about demons. You know, demons this, demon of that, demon of, you know, stupidity, demon of, you know, paranoia, you know. And he said, but I really haven't read any one thing on God's holy angels. You have to understand, in the book of Revelation, it says one angel. Doesn't name, doesn't say it's Michael. It says one angel opens the bottomless pit, takes Satan, and throws him in, slams it shut, locks him there. An angel, one angel. They're sent forth to minister to the heirs of salvation. Over 300 mentions of angels in the scripture. They're watching us. They're caring for us. Strengthening, ministering to, caring for. That should be the thing that we want to talk about, supernatural realms that amazes us. That's why, you know, Peter, wanting to protect the Lord of the universe, in Gethsemane, whips out his sword and slices off Malchus's ear, the servant of the high priest. And Jesus says to Peter, Peter, put your sword away. Don't you know that right now I could call 12 legions of angels? Now try to think of this. A legion was 6,000. Just for the sake of damage control, try to imagine this. One angel, 185,000 Assyrians in one night. So 12 legions, that's 72,000. 72,000 angels times 185,000 in one night. That means 12 legion angels could deal with 13,320,000,000 soldiers in one night. That's, I thought you might be interested in that. What Jesus is saying to Peter is, Peter, chill, please. Put the sword away. You know, the Lord of the universe doesn't feel any safer now that high priest servants only have one ear. Now, you know, it doesn't tell us, but I wonder what it was like in Jerusalem that morning. I wonder who cleaned up. I mean, you couldn't just let that lay there. That had to be dealt with. But I mean, just to get up in the morning after being terrified after him. You know, you hear all these guys standing outside the walls, and you go to Jerusalem. It's interesting because it's very understandable. It's contained. You can see where the walls are, even today, of the old city. And to hear these guys out, don't you trust that God? Don't you deceive him? Don't you let him deceive you? We whooped all of the other countries. We whooped their gods. We're going to whoop your God too. You're going to end up drinking your own urine and eating your own dung. And that's what your life is going to be like. That's what kind of God you serve. And imagine looking as far as you can see. Armies, archers, horses, cavalry. And having Hezekiah say, don't be afraid. Right. No. The Lord said, he's not going to be mocked. Going to protect Jerusalem for his own name's sake. He's going to get them with a blast. Whatever that is, it'll be fine with us. And imagine getting up in the morning, quiet. Not a noise outside the walls of Jerusalem. I bet the people of Jerusalem stood on the walls that morning, and I bet they were dead quiet too. I bet they just looked and stood in awe and wondered. And I bet they came down off the walls and went to the temple and worshipped and sacrificed. Well, Sennacherib, sore loser, he goes home, returned to Nineveh, and verse 37 says this, and it came to pass as he was worshipping in the house of Nisroch, his god, that Adramelech and Sharezer, his sons, smote him and killed him with the sword. They were probably mad their whole life that they were named Adramelech and Sharezer. And then they escaped into the land of Armenia, and Esarhaddon, their brother, Sennacherib's other son, reigned in his stead. Isn't it irony? Here, the people of Israel, of Judah, living inside Jerusalem, are protected from 185,000 crack troops by one angel, by the word of the Lord. And here Sennacherib dies in the temple of his God. His God can't even protect him from his two kids. Now, by the way, parents, our God can protect us from our kids, just in case. I don't want you to worry, but... Jehovah's working... Now, in those days, Hezekiah was sick unto death, 39 years old. Imagine the tremendous things that he's seen. You know, I'm sick unto death. Why didn't you just let an Assyrian archer hit me in the head? Lord, this doesn't make sense. I thought things couldn't get any worse. And here this tremendous victory, and now there's the tremendous work of God going on and all this. Now I'm sick. Doesn't say because of lack of faith. Doesn't say, don't listen to any of that stuff. This is earth. Hezekiah, this godly king, he's sick. And the prophet Isaiah, the son of Amos, came to him. And he probably looked up and said, oh, great, here's Isaiah. You know, when the Assyrians were outside, they went to Isaiah. Isaiah went, talked to the Lord. He came back and said, don't sweat it. Don't worry. What's up, Isaiah? Got a word for me? He said unto him, thus saith the Lord, set your house in order. You're going to die. Go ask one more time, would you please? Isaiah says, set thine house in order, for thou shalt die and not live. Again, what is that? What would that mean for us? Get your house in order. Again, I think there's some basic things. I think everybody here should have a will. Unless you don't have nothing and you live in a tent somewhere. But I mean, if you live in civilization, you have children, you need a will. Because if the state takes them, even your relatives are going to have to fight to get custody of them. Very important to have your house in order in certain ways. Insurance, I mean, basic things, I mean, responsibility. Beyond that, of course, your house in order. If you were struck down today, would your kids walk with the Lord? Have you set those things right? Have you taught them and instructed them?
And then beyond that, internally, you know, if I knew I was going to meet the Lord face to face tonight at midnight, there's probably a couple of things I'd get on my knees and talk to him about just to make sure we were okay before midnight. It's not, don't look at me suspicious. It's nothing, you know, there's no big secret or anything. I mean, just, you know, in my own fellowship with him, and set your house in order. You're going to die. You're not going to live. Then he turned his face to the wall. You ever feel that way? You know, that's the way I am when I'm sick. When my wife is sick, she wants me to bring her ginger ale with a straw, chicken soup, tea. When I'm sick, don't get near me. Nail the door shut. Whatever sound you hear coming out of the room, don't open it. You know, I don't usually get sick, so when I'm sick, I want to be miserable. I don't want anybody cheering me up, making me happy. I just want to do it right. I want to be sick and get it over with. And I just growl, just don't get near me. So I understand Hezekiah completely here. Just turns his face to the wall. And he prayed unto the Lord, saying, I beseech thee, O Lord, remember now. No, he didn't really have to say that because God doesn't forget. Remember now how I have walked before thee in truth with a perfect heart. Well, that's remarkable. And have done that which is good in thy sight. And Hezekiah wept sore. Now, I don't think he's weeping because he's afraid to die. I don't think this is, you know, we see God come to his, to Elijah, remember? And it was the day that Elijah, you know, everybody said, oh, the sons of the prophets, do you know that your master's going, you know, the Lord's going to take him today? Elijah wasn't crying, wasn't sweating, and it wasn't. And even Elisha, when we looked at him a few weeks ago at the end of his life there, he prophesies and he deals with the king and makes some arrangements about battle and then he goes. Well, Hezekiah is not here weeping because, man, I got to get to the temple. I got to make some sacrifices. I got some sin that needs to get straightened out. No, there's none of that. Hezekiah says, Lord, remember, I walk before you with a perfect heart. Then you go to Isaiah chapter 38 on your own, and you read his prayer there that he prayed at this time when he was sick. I think we get a hint then. You know, Hezekiah has no heir at this point in time. He has no sons. I think Hezekiah looks around and he says that, I haven't declared to the next generation. Lord, there's a great work going on and the work is not over. Be gracious, Lord. I think Hezekiah probably said, you promised that there would never fail of the seed of David to be a king upon the throne. I have no heir. This work is not done. Lord, I have not yet communicated successfully to the next generation the wonders of who you are and what you do, that you're the living God, that we can speak to you, that we can listen and hear your voice, that you're as alive today as you were in the days of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Lord, my job is not done. And I think in that he wept and he sought the Lord. It came to pass, before Isaiah was gone out to the middle court, that the word of the Lord came to him, saying, turn again, go on back, tell Hezekiah, the captain of my people, thus saith the Lord, the God of David, thy father, I have heard thy prayer, I have seen thy tears. Behold, I will heal thee. On the third day thou shalt go up into the house of the Lord. So evidently he's pretty sick now. He's laid up. God knows in his heart he had wanted to go and worship and hasn't been able to. And I will add to thy days 15 years. Now God, you know, was God wrong sending the prophet Isaiah, get your house in order, you're going to die? Well, no. God had said through Jonah to Nineveh, repent, because in 40 days destruction is coming. And Nineveh depended. They repented and the destruction didn't come. And I think God was speaking to Hezekiah. I think it was something that God wanted to bring into alignment in the life of Hezekiah here. I think Hezekiah took inventory, faced his own mortality, said, what have I done? What will I be leaving behind? What have I accomplished? What have I not accomplished? I think that's exactly what God wanted of Hezekiah's heart. And he said to Isaiah, go on back and tell him, I'm going to heal him. And you know the story here? With a lump of figs. It doesn't say that, but Isaiah is going to say to him, get a lump of figs and put it on this boil. There's certain kind of cysts and boils even today, a doctor will tell you, they can get into your spine, they can get different places in your nervous system, they'll kill you. I always forget the name of them, they're long. And he's going to say, get this big wad of figs. They would mush it up and make a big, like a big wad of mud. It was made of figs, and put it on there. You know, God says through Isaiah to Hezekiah, I'm going to heal you. Why don't do the figs? Just touch me and heal me. What do we need figs for? You're God. I'm sick. Heal me. Well, God doesn't mean he gets medicine, does he? Was simpler then. You need the Blue Cross or Blue Shield. You don't need Blue Cross and Blue Shield for a lump of figs. You know, it's just much easier. Everything was simplified then. You didn't have to get an MRI or nothing. Just get figs. God has nothing against. Jesus said, those that are sick have need of a physician. I'm going to heal him. I'm going to add 15 years to his life, and I will deliver thee and this city out of the hand of the king of Assyria. I'll defend the city for mine own sake and for the sake of my servant David. Now, some say Hezekiah should never have prayed, because 3 years after this prayer, Manasseh will be born. Manasseh is the most wicked king that Judah will ever see. It is because of Manasseh's sin the judgment that is irrevocable is pronounced upon Jerusalem and Judah. And even though he has a grandson named Josiah that brings reform and a reprieve, and God is gracious for a space, still God says, because of the sin of Manasseh, my judgment will not turn away. And some people say, well, that Hezekiah should have just died. If it had just died, Manasseh, no, that's ridiculous. God doesn't determine whether we live or die because our kids are sinners. If that was true, then David should never have lived, because he had a whole slew of sinners for kids, wicked kids. From Ammon to Absalom, even Solomon in the end of his life introduced idolatry into the nation. God doesn't determine whether we live or die because of how our kids turn out. The hard thing is, we do our best, we teach them the word, we instruct them. Some of them are obedient learners. They listen, they grow, they learn. They implement, they come to faith, and they have a great walk. Then we have other kids that say, okay, I know that's true. I'll take all this Bible information, store it away for a rainy day. But right now I'm going to go out and bang my head against the wall and see what's true. And we say to them, please don't do that. Don't put your head down and run into a brick wall, please. Why? Because it hurts. How do I know? Trust me. Maybe they're not telling me the truth. And you have some of those kids that just say, here we go. They put down their head and they run into the wall. Wham! And it takes them a while, some of them. Prodigals. But remember, if you're here this evening and you have a prodigal, you have a kid who's gone the wrong way. From what I read in here, the best father has prodigals. God the Father has prodigals. There's something better about them when they get back. You could never prescribe it, but wonderful stuff comes out the other end. Don McClure, his one son, just drove him out of his mind. I mean, from rolling on the floor, fist fighting, wrestling, and, you know, drugs. Just went to the church and said, I'm going to step down. They said, what do you mean you're going to step down? My house is out of order. What do you mean it's out of order? This is going on with my son. What'd you do? I threw him out. And they said, well, your house ain't out of order then. You threw him out. But Don said, when I put him out, I grabbed him, and I said, you owe me one thing. What? you know, a kid, imagine an 18, 19 year old. I brought you into this world. I wiped your rear end. I took care of you when you were sick and you had a fever. I've watched you your whole life. I've fed you. I paid for your school. You owe me one thing. What? If you find anything better than Jesus out there, you come and tell me. That's what. Boom, shut the door and he was gone. And Gene said it was about 7 or 8 months later, one day in the middle of the day, Don was at work at the church. There was a knock on the door. She opened the door. There was their son, all beat up like an alley cat. He said, "Mom, yeah, go tell Dad there ain't nothing better than Jesus out here." And he's on staff now at a Calvary and an assistant pastor and just doing great stuff. And it's a shame. But to say that a person shouldn't live because they have strange kids is crazy. No, Hezekiah had a purpose. More than that, when we go to the genealogy of Jesus Christ in Matthew chapter 1, we see Hezekiah, we see Manasseh in the line of the Messiah. Josiah. Go tell Hezekiah he's going to live. I'm going to heal him. I'm going to add 15 years to his life. I'm going to deliver him. Assyria is not going to be a problem anymore. And Isaiah said, verse 7, "Take a lump of figs." And they took it and they laid it on the boil. And he recovered. And Hezekiah said unto Isaiah, "What shall be the sign that the Lord will heal me, and that I shall go up into the house of the Lord the third day?" Now, maybe that seems a little presumptuous to you, but you got to figure, Hezekiah's thinking, wait a minute. You walk in here, you come waltzing in, God's prophet, I think you're bringing me good news, and you tell me, get your house in order, you're going to die. I turn over, roll over to the wall, start to pray and cry, you leave. You're only going 5 minutes, and you come back and say, "Oh, you're going to live. Put figs on your boil." He said, "What about a sign? You know, give me something. You know, you're going both ways today, Isaiah. I don't know. You know, how about a sign? Help me believe." And Isaiah said, "This sign shalt thou have of the Lord, that the Lord will do the thing that he has spoken." Going to give you a sign. You choose. Shall the shadow go forward 10 degrees or back 10 degrees on the sundial that his father had set up? And Hezekiah answered, "Well, it's no big deal if the shadow goes forward 10 degrees. It does that every day. Let the shadow return backwards 10 degrees. And Isaiah, the prophet, cried unto the Lord. And he, that's the Lord, brought the shadow 10 degrees backward, by which it had gone down in the dial of Ahaz. Ahaz had set up this big series of steps that was, the first time we hear a clock mentioned is in Daniel, time measured that way, but here measured by these steps in the sundial, and they could measure degrees, not, you know, they couldn't do exactly what we do today, but he said, let the shadow come back 10 degrees. So you imagine, now it doesn't say this, because everybody already, you know, first of all, everybody gives me this article at the time about the guy that worked for NASA, and I forget the guy's name, I can remember, and that he looked in NASA, and Joshua's long day figured out, and it was 23 hours, and it was, you know, 40 minutes off or something, or now, and then he found this place in the Bible. No, that's a bogus story, by the way. I appreciate all the articles, it's not true. 10 years ago, I said it was true. But since the internet is up and you look all these things up, now you go to the guy's name, you look it up, and it says none of these things are confirmed, none of this is real. That's not real. This was. Doesn't say that the earth stopped and turned backwards. That the earth went, and all the ocean sloshed out and washed everything and then turned. It says the shadow went backwards. God is smarter than that. If I know that, he knows that. It would cause a catastrophe. It says he just bent light. That's all he had to do. He just made the shadow go the wrong way. Now look. In that, God's signs are already, they're always sermons. It's God's saying more than, look what I can do with, you know, refraction, something they're going to talk about in the future. You don't know about it yet, but these are, what God is saying to Hezekiah, and I think that he would say to us tonight, is I can turn back the clock. I can restore the years that the locust has eaten away. Hezekiah, when you laid in bed and you took inventory, you said, you know, I haven't communicated successfully to the next generation. I haven't. You read his prayer in Isaiah 38. And no doubt he thought, I should have tried harder. I should have done a better job. I could have given myself more to this. I've wasted time. You know what? I can relate to that in my own life. And I think what the Lord would say to us is, no time wasted. If you give me your heart now, we can get this program moving. I can turn back the clock. Oh, nobody may know it or recognize it, but I can add those things that should have been done to the program now. I can restore the years that the locust has eaten away. Never too late. I think of Corrie Ten Boom. You know, Chuck Smith did her funeral. What a great gal. Really didn't have a flourishing ministry to the end of her life, in her old age. God is able to use us at any time. He's not looking for your credentials. He's not looking for your qualifications. He's looking for your availability. The time is short. The eyes of the Lord going to and fro throughout the earth, looking for those whose hearts are perfect toward Him. And He's not looking for your qualification. He's looking for your availability. Let me tell you this. Again, in the letters to Timothy, when the Lord describes qualifications for leaders in the church, He says, a man that rules his own house well, a man who's not given to filthy lucre, not chasing money, a man who's not given to wine and drunkenness, one wife type of man, rules his own kids, a guy who's temperate, doesn't lose temper, doesn't fist fight, goes through all of this stuff, and he only says in three little words, apt to teach. We build seminaries around those three words and Bible schools. That was the minor thing that he mentions in the qualification of someone who might serve him. And you look at it carefully, and God's saying, if you'll give me your heart, if you'll give me integrity, if you'll give me character, you only need to be apt to teach. I'll anoint that. I can take care of that. Because when someone falls and brings a reproach on Christ, it's not in the area of apt to teach. It's in one of those other areas. God's looking for those who will give their hearts, their lives, to commune with Him, to love Him, to say, Lord, speak to me today. I'm a carpenter, or I'm a computer technician, or I'm in this place. So, Lord, today, speak to me. I've waited. I've dilly-dallied. I pushed the clock back, Lord. Turn back the 10 degrees on the sundial, Lord. Add some years to me here. Give me time, Lord. Isn't it remarkable that we can ask Him to do that? I'm telling you, it's remarkable. It is remarkable. I think of all the wasted years of my life. Think of what it was like for us here that spent years in the world unsaved, years that we took drugs. I think of my life before I came to Christ. It was a waste. I quit everything I started. Except getting stoned. I was successful at that. I was successful at quitting. No direction. Floundering. 22 years old when Christ revealed Himself to me. There were other people that were millionaires by the time they were 22 years old. I was still spaced out hippie when I was 22 years old. And how God was able to reach into my life, open my eyes, have me take inventory. I remember I looked at my parents and thought, these poor people that I've been driving crazy. My mom had been crying, looking at me, you know, just, Lord, these two people have put up with me and fed me and let me live in their house, you know. And then how God, as it were, turns back the sundial and adds to your life and makes something of it. Without of all the preparatory years that you think have to be there building and building and building up to success, God is able to cut that past off. And all the negativeness of it, all the wasted time of it, and to begin afresh then, and to add years and to add opportunity and to add life to our years. Willing to do that tonight. Let's have the musicians come.